Last week, we started a series called The Way. And as we look at Jesus, and he's calling his disciples, and they go and follow. And today in the gospel reading, it was Matthew, Levi, same person, two different names, similar to Simon Peter, who gets up and follows Jesus. And what does that mean? What does it look like to follow Jesus, to follow in the way that he would lead, to go in his direction? So today we're going to look at the text from 1 Corinthians, the very end of chapter 12 and into chapter 13, and then we'll be kind of bouncing back into chapter 12 a little bit as well. So if you want to grab the Bible from the pew rack in front of you or open up an app or whatever you want to do to be able to follow along, that might be really helpful to see how this text is kind of structured and how these themes from chapter 12 carry into chapter 13. So what does it mean to follow Jesus, and what does it look like to follow Jesus? It looks a lot like, well, it looks like love, actually. And we know, and we'll talk about this as we get into the message, that Jesus is love, and so following Jesus looks like love. But the question that we have to answer before we get too far into that is, what is love? So what is love? Guys, mark your calendar, because in 4 days, there's an event that you better make sure you know about. It's Valentine's Day this week. Just to make sure we're all on that page, right? So Valentine's Day is coming up, and it's a big deal, right? We make a big deal of Valentine's Day, and it seems like in the grocery stores and retail places, things that are pink and red and other pastel colors and some lavender, lacy thing, doily looking stuff, it hits the, like, they take the Christmas things out and they put the Valentine's things directly in that aisle, right? And I guess that makes sense. Probably, you know, after this week, all that goes away and then it just all turns green, because then we'll be almost into March, and so we've got to get all of our St. Patrick's Day stuff collected, right, and ready. So Valentine's Day, classrooms across the country, teachers, I don't know that we do this. Brian, you probably don't do this at the high school level, do you? Where kids make boxes for Valentine's? You don't do that with juniors and seniors in high school? The shoebox. You remember doing that? Did we all do that? Get the shoebox and cut a slot in the top. This happens here. If you grew up somewhere else, I don't know. Did you do that? You did that? So South Africa did it? Anybody not aware of what this looks like in a classroom to decorate, right? You have to get all the right colors of construction paper, and you have to get, you glue stuff on it, and you make sure your name is on there so you can put it on your desk proudly to receive all of the many greetings from your classmates. I remember one year I made one that was big. I wanted to make sure it held all of the Valentines. I did not do that again. It probably wasn't quite as big, but maybe when I was a small kid, that's how big it felt. I don't know. Right? That's what Valentine's Day looks like. And so you can walk down the aisle, and there are little boxes of 30 greeting cards, and they're all like this big. When you fold them over and put the little sticker on and write your names. And that's what it looks like. And so the kids will get these Valentine's greetings from other students, and we make a big deal. And it's important, actually, to celebrate love, to recognize that we have loving relationships and we can love each other. We celebrate marriages, families, love from parent to child and friends and classmates. And we do that on this one particular day, February 14th, right? So if your calendar, I'm almost positive, we'll have little tiny letters on it that says Valentine's Day. They need to make that bigger, right, on the calendar. Put it in red or something on the calendar so we see it coming, even though the grocery stores remind us. But what is love? Sometimes we can understand things better if we know the opposite, so we understand what love isn't. And Paul goes on to describe some of that in this text in 1 Corinthians 13. One thing we know, that love is not just emotional or romantic. That love is more involved than that. You know, if we look at, if our definition of love that we carry if it looks like Valentine's Day, that's pretty limited, right? Because we know in experience, relationships that are loving, our love relationships, don't look like that all the time. It's good to celebrate that and remember, especially maybe this week with some flowers or whatever you want to do. But there's more than that, right? It's more than a chemical reaction in the hypothalamus or some way that doctors or psychologists would describe love. It's more than something happening. It's more than, you probably remember this, like, or you've had this happen. You meet a person and it's hard to swallow. And you feel like sweaty all of a sudden, right? And maybe your palms are sweaty and your stomach feels weird, right? Have you had that recently? No. Love is more than that. It's more than that kind of experience. And so Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 13 about love, but he's not writing about romantic love, actually. Paula and I had this text read at our wedding, 1 Corinthians 13, because it talks about love, and so it's good to remember what love looks like in this biblical definition of love. But in the context of our wedding, which is, you know, this is a celebration and a commitment of romantic couplehood, there's much more going on in this text than, it's not just a wedding text. Paul didn't write this so it could be used at weddings. But he's talking about what love isn't. Love is not arrogant or rude. This is in starting in verse 4. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing. In short, love is not self-centered. We're like a selfie culture now, right? And that comes very naturally. Now, maybe you don't snap selfies with your device, but aren't we all in our nature concerned about ourselves? We, you know, think about our needs. We often put ourselves first. It's just human nature, right? It's the way we are because of the fall. We have this kind of selfishness built into us. And so Paul's saying here that love is not self-centered. There's a Whitney Houston song, "The Greatest Love of All." You remember that song? I would sing it for you, but I won't. Paul is the vocalist. She does a good Whitney Houston. But anyway, the lyric in that song, in case you haven't ever thought of it, "The greatest love of all, learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all." Now, it's important to love yourself and have a self-worth and a self-image that, you know, where you have a good, positive, you know, self-image. But is learning to love yourself actually the greatest love of all? Drew's voting against that idea, that would be the greatest love. And it's okay to take a selfie sometimes, but my favorite pictures are pictures with other people. Do we want to change the batteries and see if that noise might go away? It's the light's still green, but okay, time out. Better? Better? Oh, there we go. Oh, now we're going to start over. My favorite pictures are pictures with other people where, you know, where there's action and activity and relationship, and it's not just, here's me in a place. Here's me with a plate of food, right? And those are fun. I'm not opposed to selfies. Take a selfie if you want to take a selfie. But if, like, that's our whole experience, like, look at me, then we're missing out on the relationships and that we should be celebrating. Love is not focused on hurts, past or present. And that's what Paul is talking about here as he says in verse 5, not irritable or resentful. If you have the NIV in front of you, it'll say, not easily angered, keeps no record of wrongs. And I like that translation. I'm not good at that, those words. Because it's easy, right, to remember sometimes. Like somebody who has hurt you, deeply, maybe years and years ago. You remember who it was, you remember the situation, probably you remember the feeling. You remember probably feeling upset and angry and then wanting to respond. Liam Neeson was in a whole lot of been in a whole lot of headlines because he said some things. He shared a story about a situation in his family, and a person in his family was attacked, and then he wanted revenge. And he, in the story, he talks about the race of the person who was the attacker, and then in this general scope, anyone from that race he wanted to get revenge on. And now people have turned it into, oh, he's a racist. I see it a lot differently. I think it's, you know, just this desire that we have in us to respond to hurt with hurt, right? To do the eye for an eye thing, because we're good at that. And even if we don't do it right away, we have that, and that's really what he talks about in the story that he told, was he had that desire to get even, right? I don't get mad, I get even. Have you ever thought that or said that before? And how about keeping no record of wrongs? Oh my goodness, I'm pretty good at keeping score. And do you do the same? Even for little stuff, right? Oh, well, check, you know. And maybe hopefully we don't write it down. Don't write it down. It's probably not good. But just even mentally, right? And we know in our relationships where, oh yeah, that has happened. You know, that person kind of burned me. That person talked about this. That person said something about me talking with somebody else. That person, you know, made me feel that way. And we keep track and we keep our records, but Paul's saying it's different from that. And love is more than a feeling. Love is an attitude. Love takes action. Love is a decision. And love is hard work. And that's the reality when we really think about love and the relationships that we have and how we express love and how we grow in love and how love really works. Love is work. And it's consistent work, and it's way more than what we'll experience Thursday, right? It's not just pink hearts and flowers and frilly things. Love is like you got to get in the trenches and you got to do things. Like, you got to put in the time and put in the effort and work hard in a relationship to express love. But love is the greatest gift of all. Is the greatest gift that we can give or receive. There's a wide variety of spiritual gifts, and this takes us into the context of where chapter 13 in 1 Corinthians, where it is. So we back into chapter 12, and we did this 2 weeks ago. We talked about the body and its many members, and so the foot and the hand and the eyes and the ears, and remember that? Paul uses that illustration. But he, in that chapter, is talking about the gifts that the Spirit gives. So in verse 7 from chapter 12, he said, "To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good." And then almost at the end of the chapter, he says, "Earnestly desire the higher gifts." Each person has been given a unique set of gifts from the Spirit of God. You've been gifted. You've been gifted with abilities that you have, with gifts of the Spirit. Paul has a bit of a list in here. It's not exhaustive, of course, but he talks about things like wisdom and knowledge and prophecy and faith, gifts of healing and miracles and tongues and the interpretation of tongues. And they're all good gifts. But as he gets into chapter 13, he's talking about how those gifts then are used. What do we do with the gifts we've been given? And we see that in the early part of chapter 13, where he says this: "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal." So tongues carries over from chapter 12 into chapter 13. If you've been given this gift of tongues, but you use it without love, it's just making noise. It's just sound. It's not connecting. It's not being used well. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, more of the gifts from chapter 12, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, connected back again into chapter 12, but have not love, I am nothing. So it's how we're using the gifts we've been given, how we're applying those things in our lives, and what are we doing with them? If I give away all I have, this is in verse 3, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. So gifts without love are then worthless, actually. So what was going on in Corinth? I mean, we have to understand this in the context to which Paul was writing it. The first audience that read these words, what was happening? A lot of this book, this letter, it was a letter that he wrote to Corinth to basically describe for people who are living in this context of first century Greece culture under Roman authority, with all of the things of Greek culture. Corinth is a town, we got to go there a few years ago. There was a group of us went on a tour, and we were in Corinth. It was one of the first places we went. And in Corinth, there's this marketplace. They're rediscovering all these ruins and rebuilding things. And so the marketplace is down below, and up above, there's a temple to a Roman god. And in the context, like in the Greek culture, the exploration of wisdom and understanding was really important. This is the thing that they would pursue, and they would sit and talk about ideas and wisdom and understanding. And so Paul's saying, look, if you can understand, if you have wisdom, if you can speak in tongues, if you can do all these things that are important, and they're important in the church, but you're not loving, then you're missing it. You're wasting the resources that you have. And so for the people in Corinth, we can infer by how he's writing it that there was like a hierarchy of how people were viewing each other. Like some people feel more important and some people are considered less important, and some gifts are more important and others are less important. And some people, you know, are proud and almost like arrogant in this church. This is a church, one of the earliest churches there was. And so Paul's writing to them saying, you got to get this right. Do this better. Love each other, right? Connect with one another, and then use the things God's given to do it right. If we back into chapter 11, it's like when you come and celebrate the Lord's Supper, you got to know what you're experiencing, what you're doing. It's important. It's important to pay attention to these details and understand all that's happening. And so here in chapter 13, this is about how we're using the gifts we've been given and to do that in love. Can't just go through the motions. Can't have a self-centered attitude or posturing, but instead use the gifts for what they're intended. And we understand that by looking to Jesus, because Jesus showed us real love. Real and true and abundant love. 1 John 3:16. By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us. So if we want to see what love looks like, if we want to understand love, we look to the cross. We look to the cross where we see Jesus' love laid down for ours. This is how we even know what love is, what it looks like, how it responds, how it acts. That's love. Any other love pales in comparison. So real love looks like Jesus. Love can be romantic. It can be between, you know, within a couple relationship. Within a family, we can have family relationships that are loving. But real love follows the Lord's example. He died for us because of his love for us. And he calls us to follow him and then walk the way of love. So we walk in this way. Very end of chapter 12. This is the first part of what Susan read for us. Verse 31. Paul begins, so it's an introduction. The chapter break kind of fell at an awkward place. So people have included the end of chapter 12, the very tail end of it, with chapter 13. Because it's a good introductory line into what he's going to talk about. And he says this, end of chapter 12 at verse 31. I will show you a still more excellent way. This whole series, we're going to be talking about the way. Here is an excellent way, the still more excellent way to live, to use the gifts you've been given, to do the things that we should do as church. And how do we do that? We realize what true love is. What's true love? Look at what true love is. Chapter 13, verses 4 and then verses 7 and 8. Love is patient and kind. Read this with me if you would. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. That's what love is. That's what love looks like. And as we look at the love of Jesus through the cross, we see that this is what Jesus did. Was Jesus patient and kind? Absolutely. The vast majority of the time, the people he lost patience with were the people who should have known better. Right? But he was very patient and very kind with people who had needs. Did Jesus bear all things? Believe all things? Did he hope all things? This is where we find hope and faith and belief and endurance. Did Jesus endure all things? Absolutely. And he loved us with an everlasting love. This is what love looks like. It's patient and kind. How's your patience? Sometimes a little thin. I'll admit mine is. When we have a lot to do, there's a lot going on, there's, you know, a busy schedule, our calendar is full, we're going to schools and going to programs and going, you know, doing meetings and having evening commitments and all these things we have to get done and work that has to happen and the branches of the palm trees that are swaying back and forth in this crazy wind and brushing the top of the house, and I can hear it scrape, scrape, scrape because I haven't had time and it's been pouring down rain, so I can't get up there and cut them off. Like, oh, there's so much to do and not enough time to do it in. And so my patience gets thinner and thinner. And then you get out there and you're driving and there's people who have less patience than you. And that makes me impatient with them. Love is patient. Love is kind. That's your kindness. Sometimes I think it's almost easier to show kindness to a person that I think I might not see again or see very often. Have you experienced that? Where a kind gesture to a stranger might come somewhat easily, and maybe because I think, oh, it's not something I'm going to end up doing all the time. But a person that I should do kind acts for, kind things for, and I might run short on that sometimes. Love forgives. In the text it says, bears and endures all things. Sometimes it's hard, and we talked about that already, about bearing and enduring and instead of holding grudges and keeping records. Love looks for the positive, where it says believes and hopes all things. That's the positive side of life. Love focuses on others. Love never fails. Love never ends. So the call, as we understand true love through Jesus who has loved us, now the call is for us to then live and love like Jesus, to serve, to speak, to act, and live in love. It's our response to God's love for us, right? Having received the love of God, having had that poured into our hearts, now we can, through the power of the Spirit, now live out that love of God that we have received. Love is sacrificial, selfless love. Greater love has no one than this, that he would lay down his life for his friends. Jesus said those words, anticipating his own sacrifice for his friends and then instructing his followers how it should look. So it's Valentine's Day this week. Love whom you love. Definitely. Celebrate it. Enjoy it. Relish it. But love like that regularly. So the day we celebrate love is every day, not just one day on the calendar. And love like that with many, because who needs love? Only everyone. In this call to the disciples, Levi throws a party, right? Jesus calls him to follow. Levi follows, and then he has a banquet. And the people with whom Jesus had little patience, the Pharisees and scribes, were like, "What? Look at him. He's eating with tax collectors and sinners. What's going on?" Right? Who did Jesus love? He loved the people who had need. And that's what he goes on to talk about. The ones who need the doctor are the sick. The ones who need love is only everybody, right? How many people in surrounding us in our lives need love? They all do. We all do. So let's love. Love the least. This past week, I had a pretty strange conversation. So my office is over here in the building, and I have windows from my office that look out on Evans Road. And the high school is that direction, and our house is that direction. So somewhere around 310, 315, a few days a week, I'll hear a horn honk, and I'll turn around, and Paula will have picked up Gina from the school, and Drew will be with her, and so there'll be kids in the car, and she's driving by, and I just get a little beep, beep, and then I turn around, and I get a wave. And it's a nice, you know, 30-second moment in the day, just to wave and say hi. It's nice. It's fun. Well, this past week, it was somewhere around that same time, and I didn't hear a horn honk. All of a sudden, if I'm looking at my computer screen, my back is to the windows. So all of a sudden, on the glass of the window, it startles me, and I turn around, half expecting to see that instead of the horn honking, that maybe one of the kids jumped out and, "Oh, I'm going to go scare Dad" or something. Don't get any ideas. And I turn around, and it's not them. It's a man, and behind him is the shopping cart that he's pushing, and he clearly looks like a person who's probably homeless or housing challenged. And my initial reaction is, I wonder what he wants. And I feel bad about that, but that's my confession. And it's an interruption to my day, and you know? Maybe you've had that kind of experience as well. And then he said, "Do you have a Bible?" "Yes, we have a Bible. I will gladly give you a Bible." So I sent him, he was over here, and I said, "Just go down to where the driveway is. Now take a, you know, go around the end of the building and come in by the parking lot. And then come in over here, and I'll get you a Bible." And so I went, and I grabbed one of the welcome bags that we have. If you're a first-time visitor, and you've never got a welcome bag, or maybe you've visited a bunch of times, and you never got a welcome bag, we'll get you one. There's a Bible in there. There's a DVD in there. I took his DVD out. I didn't think that would be helpful. And some information about the church. So I just grabbed that, and I met him in the parking lot. And Monday, it was starting to rain in the afternoon. It was kind of cold. He didn't have a lot of layers of clothing and didn't look like he maybe had an umbrella or anything. And so I invited him to come in. And he came in, and there's a section of one of these pews over toward the office. So he had a seat, and I stood there, and we just had this conversation. And he's flipping through the Bible, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, Ezekiel." And he's telling me things that he'd heard about Ezekiel and Job. And I think it's in Titus. And he's looking up Titus, and he's looking up different Bible passages. And it was like, this is a brother in Christ. And my initial reaction was, ugh. And what a lesson it was for me to learn that I can take the moment to love a person who's in need. Now, it went on from there, and he told me he used to live in the Swiss Alps and drive a Ferrari. And I'm not making this up. He told me he had a wife that was 9 feet 5 inches tall. So there were parts of it that were a little different. But it was a good reminder for me that there are going to be times when there's someone who has a need. And as he talked, and he went for like 30 minutes without, it seemed like he didn't take a breath. And I thought, this guy might not have people listen to him very much. He might not have connections in his life where he can talk to people who will take the time. And maybe this is not very common. Who is it that needs just a half hour of your time that you can listen to them? And maybe we're still going to go, ugh, it's an interruption in my day. It's taking me away from the work I have to do and my, you know, my own agenda. But when we get out of ourselves and we get away from our agendas and we take the time and we listen to people, I mean, you can hear about 9'5" women that are somewhere. And you can hear a lot of other, you know, real things. And we take the time to listen to people's stories. Because there's a lot of people, I guarantee this, there's a lot of people that live around us who, even though they look cleaner and more presentable and maybe nicer than that guy, and we wouldn't necessarily go, ugh, I wonder what he wants, as that gut reaction. But there's a lot of people who don't get heard, who don't have anyone listening to the story, who don't get to share with anybody. Because we live in these boxes and these isolated ways that we go through our lives, and we're racing here and there, and we're alone in our cars, so we're not driving in that diamond lane, and you know, sitting in traffic, surrounded by people. But no one's loving. Let's love. Let's be countercultural in that way. Let's love people like Jesus calls us to do. Let's use the things that we've been given to give people that experience of love. In classrooms on Valentine's Day, over the last few years, we've gotten the list of students. Have you had that come home? Here's the list. Here's all the students in the classroom. I think that's so that names get spelled right, which is helpful. And also so that no one gets forgotten. So that no one has that box for all the Valentines and they look down in it and there's just one or two. Because that's not a good place to be. Everybody needs love. Everybody needs to feel love. Everybody needs to experience love. And so the love of God that we have in abundance doesn't get diminished as we give it away. We can give it away freely and liberally as we walk in the way of love. Let's go that way. Amen.